Good evening. As Scott mentioned, my name is Dan, and I'm a very grateful believer in Jesus Christ. And my struggles in the past have been with pornography, sexual integrity, and self-esteem issues from time to time. And I also still struggle occasionally with anger, control, and lust issues, but I'd like to share my testimony with all of you tonight, if you'll allow me to do so. I'm going to move this out of the way so I can see my pages better. All right. So anyway, to start off, I grew up in the 60s in what I would consider a pretty average American home with a mom, dad, and brother. My father worked with his dad in the family construction business, and my mom was a typical stay-at-home mom. I had a good life growing up. My grandparents lived nearby, as did many aunts, uncles, and cousins. My family and I attended church on a regular basis until I was about 8 years old. At that time, as the story goes, my dad stepped outside of church one Sunday afternoon, and lit up a cigarette, and was immediately reprimanded by one of the elders from the church. From that day on, we never returned to church as a family. The only time I would be able to attend church is when my brother and I would spend the weekend at my grandparents' house when my parents would go out of town for the weekend. As I got older, I didn't have any religious influence except the occasional church attendance with my grandparents. At times, I didn't know how to handle life or where to turn for help with problems. I was really quite shy and a bit awkward as a preteen, and I didn't really fit in or have too many friends, and I was bullied quite often at school. This is how I believe it led me down the road to having low self-esteem issues later on, which sometimes continue to resurface to this day. As I made it to high school, I was still very shy and didn't have many real friends. I did, however, have one friend that lived up the street from me, and it was during high school that both of us discovered the addiction to pornography for the first time. You see, my dad was now working for himself, and as such, had an office separate from our house. This is where my friend and I discovered all the hidden pornographic magazines. We spent hours together looking through those magazines, and we even discovered an old 8mm pornographic movie that we would watch. Deep down inside, I knew what I was doing was wrong, but I didn't know how to stop it on my own. Like I mentioned before, I didn't have anyone I felt I could really call on or turn to for help. Basically, I isolated myself from everyone except the one friend with whom I shared my secret addiction. Fast forward through high school and into my early 20s. I was still really shy and introverted and didn't really go out much. At that time, I was on a weekly bowling league with my mom and two of my grandparents. One night, my cousin came to watch and told me she had just the perfect girl for me to meet. I said, "There is no such person." The next week, she and her boyfriend walked into the bowling alley with her boyfriend's sister. She watched me bowl that night, and then come to find out she was on a team the following night, and so I came and watched her. We seemed to hit it off and began dating for the next 3 years before we were finally married. And this past July, we celebrated our 34th wedding anniversary. We still weren't attending church at the time. It wasn't until my grandfather asked my wife if she'd be interested in working part-time in their church's nursery during the weekly services. It was also during that time that I was asked if I'd be interested in learning the sound system and running it during the services as well. So both of us were back into church and involved in ministry. As we became more involved with the church, God laid it on our hearts to accept him as Lord and Savior of our lives, and in the winter of 1989, we were both baptized. We continued to grow in the Lord and in the ministry of the church. My pornography addiction and self-esteem issues seemed to be a thing of the past. I was now on the church board and had been asked to become a Sunday school teacher and youth group leader. And our family was beginning to grow with the birth of our first son, who sadly we only got to know for 15 days because of a genetic disorder called metabolic acidosis. A year and a half later, we had a second son, and 3 years after that, a daughter. Life was going well. We had our ups and downs over the next few years. Second jobs to make ends meet, and a fairly serious bike accident that landed me in the hospital overnight, as well as me making the decision to go back to school to pursue a teaching career. The summer after I finished school and earned my teaching degree, my uncle, who now lived in Salem, said the school he worked for was looking to hire a second grade teacher. He said if I was interested, I should come and interview and see where things go from there. Long story short, I was considered for and offered the position if I was interested. I had some hard praying to do because at that point, if I took the position, it would mean moving away from family and friends and starting over someplace where we'd never been. But it also meant that our kids could get a private school education for free as long as I worked at the school. So having prayed about it and making a very difficult decision, we decided to move away from everything familiar and start a new life in Oregon. For the next couple of years, I couldn't ask for anything more. I had my dream job, and we were able to purchase a house. We found and started attending Salem First Church of the Nazarene and became involved in some of its ministries there. I was once again a Sunday school teacher and became involved in running the media system and singing in the choir during its yearly Christmas productions. And it seemed like things couldn't get any better. Yes, we still had our difficult times. For instance, I had to take on a second part-time job so we could get by for a while. But other than that, life was great, or so I wanted everyone to think. Even though it seemed like I was involved in a lot of things, for the most part, I began separating and isolating myself from those around me. I began thinking back to my teenage years and the pornographic addiction that I used to enjoy. However, pornography was more easily accessible than it was in the 70s. All I had to do was turn on the computer to get my fix, and no one would ever know. At that same time, I also began to remember the times my friend and I would spend together and the things we used to do, such as viewing the pornography together. For whatever twisted reason, I was viewing my teenage son like the friend I used to have in high school and began to get him involved in my pornography addiction and everything that went with that. I became more withdrawn and isolating and controlling because I had to have things my own way. That was the only way I thought I could make everything appear as normal in my life and keep my secret hidden. I was never physically abusive, but I became mentally and verbally abusive to my family. On the outside, I made it appear as though I had the perfect life and family. On the inside, however, it was a totally different story. And the only one who knew anything about it was my son and, of course, God. My behavior continued over the next several years until 2014, when my son moved away from home to get married. It was also at that time that I no longer had a reason for looking at pornography, so in May of 2014, I gave up my pornography addiction for good, and I haven't looked at it since that time, over 8 years ago. With my son gone away and living in another state, I thought my secret life I had led for so many years would never be revealed. However, as it says in Luke 12:2, the time is coming when everything that is covered up will be revealed, and all that is secret will be made known to all. It was the spring of 2016, and our son and daughter-in-law had decided to move back to Oregon. I received a call one day towards the end of April from my son requesting I come to a meeting with he, his wife, and their pastor, because there was something they needed to talk to me about. Sensing something was wrong, I made an excuse not to go, and after arguing for a few minutes on the phone with him, I hung up. He called back and said we really needed to have this meeting and that we were going to have it the following weekend, and I'd better be there. I didn't say anything to him one way or the other, because I was afraid that my long-held secret was about to be revealed in a big way. The entire next week, I could think of nothing else except the impending meeting the following weekend. At that point, I still hadn't told my wife, Melinda, what was going on. All I said was that I had a meeting at the church that I had to attend for a little while. Upon entering the church parking lot, I was greeted by the pastor, who led me to the room where we were going to meet. At this point, I was anxious and really nervous because I didn't know how things were going to progress. At that meeting, I was confronted head-on with all my sexual sin that I had done with and to my only son. As I sat there in tears, faced with the fact of what I had done over a period of 9 years, I felt this was the lowest I could ever go. However, the pastor, sympathetic, informed me that he had no choice, being a mandatory reporter, to report this to the police for further investigation. I left that meeting feeling hopeless and lost, not knowing what to do or where to turn, because I was too embarrassed to let anyone else know what I had done. The weekend came and went, as well as Monday and Tuesday. It was early Tuesday night when I received a knock on the door from two police officers who wanted to take me to the station for some questioning. After we were finished, I was told I would not be going back to work as a teacher because of the open investigation. Fast forward to December of that same year, I had gone out and found another job and had been working for almost 6 months when one day the same two police officers who had questioned me came to my place of employment and arrested me for what they said was a violation of the conditions set by the judge a few months earlier. I was devastated as I desperately tried to call whoever I could to let them know I was being taken to jail. That was the longest and lowest day of my life. I was scared and worried for my wife because I didn't know how she'd be able to make it without me and the income I brought in. I didn't know how long I'd be gone and was worried that I might be going to prison for a very long time because of the things I had done. I was also very worried that we might lose everything we'd worked so hard to have because of the secret life I had been living for so long. The first night I was there, all I could do was cry silently to myself as I cried out to God for forgiveness and did the same thing every night for the next couple of weeks. While I was there, I did find other fellow believers, and we would pray for each other, have Bible study, and sing worship songs together at night. I was trying to make something good out of a bad situation. In fact, I even led one brother to Christ one morning after we came in from the yard. Through my time there, little did I know God was continuing to work his perfect plan for my life in his good timing. His plan was to have me sentenced, to a maximum of 6 months in county jail instead of the many years in prison I was told was possible. I was released in June of 2017 and put on probation for 5 years, which meant I couldn't attend any church gatherings, have contact with my son, or go to places where there might be minors. However, on December 16th of 2020, exactly 3 years to the day since I was arrested, I was released from all probation conditions, which also meant I could begin attending church again and begin rebuilding my relationship with my son. God was continuing to work in that, for the first time over 6 years, my son and daughter-in-law invited my wife and I to their house to spend Christmas with them that same year. God is indeed good. That following year, I began immediately talking with one of the pastors at Salem First Church of the Nazarene about being baptized. And so on May 16th, 2021, 6 months to the day I was released from my probation conditions, I was baptized and became a new creation in Christ. As it says in 2 Corinthians 5:17, "Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come, the old is gone, the new is here." Being able to start attending church also meant I could begin attending CR. I first came to CR in the summer of 2021. I first began attending myself because of my hurts, habits, and hang-ups, and later asked my wife if she'd like to attend with me because I knew she needed recovery from all the hurt I had caused her for so many years. Currently, I'm continuing to grow in my relationship with Christ through daily Bible reading, prayer, and devotions. My growing relationship with Jesus Christ has influenced my recovery by wanting to be more like Him and by wanting to share with others what Christ has done in my life. I'm inspired to assist others who need help in their walk with the Lord by means of serving in small group leadership and maybe someday working with men who are in prison through the CRI program. God is currently using me in both those roles as a co-leader for our new Journey Begins group, as well as an outside correspondent to four inmates in our prison system. As I have graduated from both the Journey Begins and the Journey Continues programs, I am currently on the leadership team for our CR at Salem Nazarene. I'm reminded of one of my favorite Bible verses, which is found in Galatians 2:20, and says, "I have been crucified with Christ, and no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I now live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me." This verse tells me my old life is gone, and I no longer stand condemned in my past. It also inspires me to live a life worthy of God's calling by serving others and not myself, as I was so used to doing for so many years. When I finished working the 12 steps, I was asked which one stuck out to me the most. My reply was, all of them spoke to me in different ways, and it was difficult for me to choose just one. However, after considering them all in deep detail, step 11 spoke to me the most. And step 11 says, "We sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out." Step 11 reminds me that in the past, I didn't have any real contact with God, although I pretended to, and that I didn't have the slightest knowledge of His will for my life. That has all changed because of the discipline of this program and what it has given to me. As I share with others what God has done and is continuing to do in my life through Celebrate Recovery, it helps my relationship with others become stronger and closer than they ever were before. For example, because of one of my character defects being control, I used to always want things my way, especially when family was involved. Today, because of the work Christ has done in my life, I've been able to let go of my control in most cases and let God have control. Notice I said in most cases because God is still helping me work through that defect in character. And because of the work He is doing, my relationships with others is beginning to be rebuilt. I'm slowly, in God's timing, being able to work on the process of reconciliation with relationships that were non-existent before. As a result of my stronger relationships, I have left a lot of things behind from my past that caused me trouble and pain. My relationship with my son is still a work in progress. We're at a point where we occasionally see each other for dinner or go out for coffee, or he comes to our house for brief visits. Again, God's timing is perfect, and I'm letting Him take control of the reconciliation process, not me. As I mentioned in the beginning, I used to struggle with sexual integrity, pornography, and low self-esteem. I used to use the first two to help me with the third. I have since discovered I don't need any of those things in my life because they are products of Satan, who once had control over my life. Now that God has control, and He doesn't desire for me to have those chains, God's broken those chains, and I no longer have the desire for them. As long as I continue to walk with God and strive to become closer to Him every day, I am confident that He will finish His good work in me as I become more aware of His will for my life. These days, I keep my walk closer to God than I ever did in the past. One of the ways I do that is by starting every morning with a couple of devotional books, Bible reading, and prayer. All this I do before getting ready to begin my day. In fact, this past year, I was able to read completely through the Bible from Genesis to Revelations. In addition to having a closer walk with God, I've also developed a closer walk and relationship with my past step study brothers. One of the greatest benefits of diving in and working through the CR program is by far the relationships you build within your step study groups. I used to be the kind of person who would find it easier to isolate myself than to come ask anyone for help. That's how I got myself into trouble in the first place. However, I now have a band of brothers who not only pray for me through my struggles, but also celebrate with me through my victories. It's an awesome feeling to know you have a group of people you can call and count on when the need arises. It's also an awesome privilege to be able to be there for others when they need someone also. My 12-step study group has been a safe, non-judgmental environment in which to share some of my darkest past secrets. For the newcomer, or someone who is relatively new to Celebrate Recovery, I will close with this final thought, hoping you will find encouragement in these words. As I look back on my life and remember what I've done to others and what I've done to myself because of the choices I've made, I'm reminded of a story in the book of Jeremiah, chapter 18. Basically, it talks about a potter who is trying to shape a lump of clay but isn't pleased with the result. So he beat down the clay and started over, forming it into something else. This story reminds me that God is the potter and that I am the clay. No matter my imperfections, God can and will use them to make something new and beautiful. While reading my morning devotional a few months ago entitled The Potter's Wheel, author Katara Patton wrote the following, which I think fits perfectly, and it reads as follows. God can shape us even when we're marred or broken. He, the masterful potter, can and is willing to create new and precious pottery from our shattered pieces. God doesn't look at our broken lives, mistakes, and past sins as unusable material. Instead, he picks up our pieces and reshapes them as he sees best. She then concludes by saying, even in our brokenness, we have immense value to our master potter. In his hands, the broken pieces of our lives can be reshaped into beautiful vessels that can be used by him. Yes, we're all broken and marred, but I am confident that as God continues to work in my life and heal my relationships, he can and will do the same for you. I pray that my story has in some way encouraged you in your walk with Jesus by showing you that no matter how marred or broken you think your life is, God can and will make something beautiful out of your life if you'll only give him the invitation to do so. Thanks for listening.